WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. The jury in Charlottesville considering damages against the Unite the Right organizers meet behind closed doors for a third day. Some free meals programs in local schools will continue beyond the pandemic. And Republican Glenn Youngkin says he wants to use Virginia's surplus revenues for tax relief. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, November 23rd. The jury will meet behind closed doors for a third day of deliberations in the civil trial against more than a dozen white supremacist leaders and groups connected to the deadly 2017 Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville. VPM's Patrick Larson reports.
The jury had several questions for District Judge Norman K. Moon Monday. They asked if they should consider negligence on the part of residents for putting themselves in harm's way. Judge Moon told them it wasn't a factor in any part of the case. He also reiterated that the jury has to reach a unanimous decision on each of the six charges. Three of the charges deal with the alleged conspiracy to commit racial violence, one covers racial harassment, and two are specific to the white nationalist who killed one and injured many more in a car attack. The jury will also be responsible for assigning monetary damages.
Patrick Larson reporting. The pandemic prompted the U.S. Department of Agriculture to provide universal free lunches to all K-12 students through next spring. Some local school divisions already provide free meals under another federal program, and they will continue to do so after the pandemic. Randy B. Hagee reports.
At Handley High School in Winchester last Friday, around 1,300 students filed through the cafeteria during one of three lunch periods, picking out chicken nuggets and vegetables, pizza, salads, and cartons of milk. The cafeteria holds a mix of traditional lunch tables, high-top banquet tables, and booth seating, all filled with kids chatting and eating, or scrolling, many sporting t-shirts advertising High School Musical on stage. Lori Curry, the food service coordinator for the division, gave me a tour.
Bulk of it, you got your hot side, you got your cold side, basically.
We do salads here,
sandwiches down there. She does all of her hot prep. Lori's one of our main cooks. Hi, Lori. Good.
Winchester City Public Schools is one of a handful of divisions in our area that offers free breakfasts and lunches for all of its students through the USDA's Community Eligibility Provision, or CEP, a federal program that helps fund meals for individual schools and entire districts where at least 40% of the student body comes from low-income homes.
We are predominantly in that poverty level because we're inner city. And the superintendent, Jason Van Hiculum, he had said maybe we need to look more into it, so I did.
Curry first entered their elementary schools into the program. When it came time to reapply after 4 years, she enrolled the whole division. She said about 53% of their students already qualified for free lunches or their families receive benefits like SNAP, which counts towards that 40% threshold. Prior to becoming a CEP division, Curry said that some students who could really use a free breakfast and lunch were falling through the cracks because their families weren't turning in the required paperwork. CEP eliminates those applications.
Some of it was pride. Some of it has to do with we're very high Hispanic population, and I feel a lot of them maybe immigrants, they don't want their names on paper, they don't want any type of government form to have their identification on it, so they would not fill it out, and they would be a lot of those families that would be ones that need it.
While the meals are now free, they have temporarily had to limit the number of choices they offer each day due to pandemic-related short staffing and supply shortages.
Today is going to be chicken tenders or popcorn chicken or chicken nuggets. We get a lot of government chicken. I do the menus, but that doesn't always necessarily mean we can get the products. And again, a lot of stuff like paper, I'm having to deal with other vendors because I can't always get it from my main vendor.
Buena Vista City Public Schools are also a division-wide CEP participant.
I think it was more beneficial for the students, you know, that weren't actually free already. And it took a lot of peer pressure away as well.
Pam Conley is the co-nutrition director.
I think more students do participate now that everyone is on equal ground. Children like to do whatever their peers are doing. So if there's children eating lunch, then, you know, everybody else is more likely to do that. But if you have a friend that's packing every day, then your friends are also going to want to pack. You see a lot of peer pressure like that with children.
Conley also saw students' families. She estimates maybe about 20% of those with kids in Buena Vista schools who did not quite qualify for free lunches, but were still food insecure.
Yes, we've had many families thank us, and it has been very helpful and beneficial to them.
According to a Virginia Department of Education report from April, other local districts that have enrolled all their schools in CEP include Bath and Nelson counties and the cities of Harrisonburg, Stanton, and Waynesboro. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
Learn more about the free meals programs in our area at WMRA.org or on the app. Some Virginia agencies are having trouble weaning employees off single-use plastics. The Virginia Mercury reports that state agencies and universities began moving away from single-use plastics after Governor Ralph Northam issued an executive order in March. Executive Order 77 directs departments to eliminate single-use plastics by the end of 2025 to reduce debris along Virginia's coasts and waterways. Officials with the Department of Corrections say that issues with following the order stem from vending machines where some drink items come in plastic bottles, and some state parks in Virginia are not located near a recycling facility. A spokesperson for Governor-elect Glenn Youngkin did not respond to questions about whether he plans to change the executive order. Well, Governor Northam is preparing his final budget to be submitted next month. On Monday, he and Governor-elect Youngkin heard about the Commonwealth's revenues, which include billions of dollars in surplus. Youngkin said he wants to use it towards tax relief.
I said last summer, Virginians had been overtaxed by $2.6 billion last year, and I fundamentally believed that was happening again. What we hear is, yes, it is. And so I do think, as I've said all along, there is ample money to provide tax relief to bring our cost of living down.
Under current law, all of the $2.6 billion must be spent, but the General Assembly could temporarily override some of those laws in their next budget. Well, Governor-elect Youngkin will enter the executive mansion with a Republican House of Delegates, but he'll also face a democratically controlled Senate. The Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
A Republican bill to ban critical race theory from Virginia classrooms will have to face a Senate Education Committee with 9 Democrats and 6 Republicans. And any effort to roll back environmental targets for reducing carbon emissions will have to face a Senate Commerce and Labor Committee with 12 Democrats and only 3 Republicans. Former Republican delegate David Ramadan, now at George Mason University's Schar School, says most of the action next year will be in Senate committees.
Any initiatives considered leaning right or right initiatives are going to be stopped in the Senate, and they're going to be stopped mostly in committees rather than in the full floor, because the Senate caucus has more room to play in committees than they do on the Senate floor.
On the floor, Democrats have a 1-vote majority, but all the committees are lopsided in favor of the Democrats. That does not mean the Senate will be a graveyard for the Youngkin agenda, says Christopher Newport University professor Quentin Kidd.
Getting rid of the grocery tax, for example, will have some bipartisan support. And so I don't expect the Senate to be the chamber where everything goes to die, but I do expect Democrats to sort of exert their ability to serve as a check on the governor in the Senate.
Youngkin will be sworn into office in January, just as the next General Assembly session begins. I'm Michael Pope.
Winsome Sears made history this month as the first woman of color to be elected to statewide office. There was another, quieter historic moment before a routine revenue meeting on Monday. Virginia Public Radio's Jad Khalil reports.
The Governor's Advisory Council on Revenue Estimates is a pretty state affair, but before the meeting, Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax approached Lieutenant Governor-elect Winsome Sears and shook hands. Sears summed up what their back-to-back victories meant.
From a black lieutenant governor to another black lieutenant governor in both parties.
It shows that we're committed to excellence, to diversity, and to giving everyone an opportunity here in our Commonwealth, so I think it's a wonderful thing.
Fairfax was the second black Virginian elected to statewide office, after Governor Douglas Wilder. Virginia's lieutenant governor presides over the state Senate and casts a vote in case of a tie. In January, the governor's mansion and House of Delegates shifts to Republican control. Lieutenant Governor-elect Sears will preside over a narrow Democratic majority in the Senate and could be the tipping point for many Republican bills. Fairfax has broken 52 ties while he's been in office. I'm Jad Khalil.
Finally today, after 2020's isolating holiday season, travel experts say the number of people leaving home for Thanksgiving may be as high as before the pandemic. AAA predicts 1.4 million Virginians will hit the road, an 11% increase over last year. Morgan Dean of AAA Mid-Atlantic says one reason for the increase in holiday travelers is the desire to see family.
We also have a lot of people with pent-up demand to get out and get back closer to normal. For families that may not have gotten together with loved ones last year or close friends last year,
Virginia's busiest road will be Interstate 95. To avoid traffic, Dean says people should start driving to their Thanksgiving location after 9 p.m. on Wednesday and then head home early Sunday morning. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected, and I hope you enjoy your Tuesday.